All right. We are back for another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. My name's Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And as always, I'm joined by my good friends from the road. Actually, I think you guys are in the same time zone for the first time. Eric, what's going on? And where are you recording from today?
I'm recording from a hotel room in San Diego. And I'm doing well.
All right. Glad to hear it. So, Luke, how far away is Eric from you right now?
About 2 hours.
Right. Okay. All right.
About an hour on the I-5 and a jaunt flat past Camp Pendleton.
So is that nice. Is like 2 hours? Because you know they always tell us about the traffic. Is like the traffic 24 hours a day? Is like is that 2 hours like a few miles up the street, or is that like 2 hours actually like a decent amount of driving distance?
No, it's a decent amount of driving distance. It's 2 hours. Most of it isn't traffic-y unless it's like a holiday weekend.
Okay.
But it's 2 hours assuming a decent amount of, like assuming a regular amount of traffic getting out of LA. But as long as you're not driving like at rush hour.
All right. How was the game?
The Rams game? The Rams game was really fun. It was like a really cool atmosphere.
Yeah, from your tweets, you know, Snoop came out. Seemed like everyone was having a really good time out there.
Snoop was amazing. Because Snoop came out, and I was there with my girlfriend, and we just looked at each other and just immediately smelled weed. And then we looked around, and like just within our little vicinity in like the nosebleed seats, there were like four people that had saved blunts specifically for this occasion.
That is hilarious. Also awesome. Also why everyone should probably live in California.
Don't tell Jeff Sessions.
Yeah. Well, it just, they voted it like recreationally legal, and that just kicked in at the start of the year.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Don't tell Wabi either. Not a fan. Not a fan.
Oh, no.
But before we digress too far here, Luke, Eric, we play this week. Vikings, playoffs, matchups. And this is a really fun matchup. Like when you really look at this one here, you have, you know, arguably the most efficient offense in the league going against arguably the most efficient defense in the league. You know, Drew Brees and Sean Payton against Mike Zimmer. You know, Case Keenum versus a defense that's shown some vulnerabilities here over the last little bit. So it's looking like it's going to be a really fun one. And of course, because it's kind of what you do, Luke, you broke quite a bit of it down for us here in an article for Purple PTSD. So I guess as you're thinking about this game and these matchups and, you know, everything that we're going to see come this weekend, you know, what are your thoughts on things and what are really the key things that you're going to be looking at based on what you've seen in the numbers?
I think the biggest thing that I'm looking for is third down efficiency, whether it's run or pass. That just is where like there's the biggest gap that I see in between the two teams. Like you look at like Michael Thomas and Xavier Rhodes, both of them are very good, right? They'll probably cancel each other out to some degree. And, you know, Cam Jordan will probably get a little bit. You know, Marshawn Lattimore on one of the wide receivers. Like, there's a lot of matchups that seem to just, like, cancel each other out or come to somewhat of a stalemate. But the third down efficiency between the Saints and the Vikings on both sides of the ball gives the Vikings a huge advantage, in my opinion, just because – you know, defensively, we're like this huge third down team, right? Like this historic third down team. And the Saints on third down, as efficient as they've been as an offense, they haven't been as good on third down in the last few weeks. Which leads me to believe that, you know, if we can keep them, even if just like third and manageable, we can keep them out of like third and one, third and two, we should be able to get the defense off the field a reasonable amount of the time and keep the offense in check. And then on the other side of the ball, the Saints defense, as much improved as it has been, has actually let up like a lot of production on third down in the last few weeks, especially to Carolina and then to Jameis Winston and to Matt Ryan. Like they've been kind of vulnerable. And I think a lot of that comes down to just like a banged up linebacker core and a banged up interior. And then I think it's just really fun, like matchup wise. You know, Trey Wayne's on Ted Ginn is just like a perfect matchup. Xavier Rhodes on Michael Thomas, like a perfect matchup. You know, Marshawn Lattimore and Marcus Williams in that secondary against Diggs and Thielen. this is just like a really fun matchup. You know, the linebackers, Barron Kendricks against Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, like every single matchup all over the field is really fun. And then I think the last key to the game that I would think about, I didn't write about this in the article, but I kind of thought about it later, was Harrison Smith, because he's one of the only defensive players that doesn't have like a clear way he's going to impact the game. Like it could be anything. Xavier Rhodes, if he has a huge impact in the game, it's going to have something to do with Michael Thomas, right? Harrison Smith can do anything. He might have a huge impact helping with the running backs. He might blitz a lot. He might just lurk back in coverage and try to pick balls off. So I'm really excited to see what the Vikings do with Harrison Smith in this one, because they don't have like a premier tight end that he needs to cover. Like if you're going to play the Patriots, you know, Smith on Gronk. So it could be anything with him.
One of the things you pointed out in your article was that just the way that we've been playing and the way that, you know, Shermer's, I guess, has kind of harnessed some of the YOLO tendencies of Keenum, that it's a probably a bit unlikely that Keenum would, I guess, outchoke Brett Favre, to use the words that you used in your article. But I guess one of the questions I had for you first, and I guess if Eric wanted to jump in on it, is that when the Vikings kind of had their way with New Orleans in week one, it really did seem like one of the big vulnerabilities of the Saints were those downfield shots. So I guess from your perspective and kind of what you're seeing, how do you expect the Vikings to attack the Saints team, given that it seems like downfield is maybe the best way to go at them, but downfield in recent weeks is also kind of where Keenum has struggled a little bit?
Yeah, and I don't think they have to go downfield to attack the Saints. I feel like, you know, I said on the Purple Journal the podcast that came out this morning, this feels like a game where like 12 different people are gonna catch passes, because, you know, the linebackers are banged up, and it's a really good way to kind of take Marshawn Lattimore out of the equation and take the secondary out of the equation and like put the game in the hands of, like, I don't even know who their linebackers' names are. I just know that like
Manti Te'o.
Yeah, put the game in the hands of Manti Te'o. I forgot he's on that team. He's doing okay.
Was it Craig Robertson?
Yeah. So I think putting the game in their hands with like swing passes and stuff, and like, you know, 3rd and 9, let's go to CJ Ham because nobody's going to cover him. It kind of feels like that sort of game, and it feels like, because in the last few weeks the Saints have given up, I think, the third worst passing success rate of all the playoff teams. They've given up a lot of passing success, and they've especially given up a lot of passing success on 3rd down, which means you don't have to, like, go for broke every time. I feel like, you know, going downfield is the way to beat, like, a really good secondary, is to just keep testing them and hope you can get something to stick. Or, you know, to beat, like, this really complete defense is you just have to go over the top, because you're only going to get so many opportunities anyways. And when they do slip up, you need to make the most of it. But with a team like the Saints, I feel like you can take a relatively conservative game plan, hide the flaws of your quarterback, and still get away with like enough offensive production that would also carry the advantage of time of possession and, you know, keeping Drew Brees off the field, and keeping your defense fresh in a matchup where you'll probably need every ounce they have, because it's going to be man-to-man and people are going to be going one-on-one against a whole bunch of good weapons.
That's awesome, man. I guess, Eric, and I guess, based on everything that Luke said, I guess, what are your thoughts on this, kind of as you look at it from a high level? Where are you seeing the advantages? Where are the things that you are thinking each of these teams might look to exploit in the other as this matchup plays out?
Yeah, so in the first matchup, Sam Bradford was 5 of 5 on passes traveling in the air. He was 4 of 5, 10 to 19 yards in the air. I think for them to be successful, I do think it requires New Orleans in the mouth a couple times with some big plays, in a way that they did, you know, against Tampa, and, you know, against Washington, and so I do think they do need to go downfield a little bit. I think with the bye week, I think that's going to help Keenum kind of reset a little bit. Also, offensively, they do need to pick their spots in the running game. I don't think that means like run more, but I also think that they need to be, whether that's by changing their offensive line the way that they've sort of in recent weeks, or just simply, you know, being more efficient when they do. But I do think they need to be efficient on early downs in out of those long yarded situations and into situations where he will throwing the ball, you know, in the, you know, intermediate to underneath routes and over the top when they choose to take those shots.
That's awesome. And so as we dig into this a little bit here, depending on the metrics that you look at, most would agree that the Saints were the toughest matchup that the Vikings could have going into this round. But as I look at some of the stuff that you've put out recently, Eric, you seem to go in a different way. So are the Saints really the toughest team left in the playoffs for the Vikings to deal with? Or in the NFC playoffs, I should say.
Yeah, the AFC, you know, has two teams that I think will be, you know, one score-ish favorites over the Vikings should they make the Super Bowl. Our numbers like Atlanta, they always have, and they've been pushed back a little bit by the results. But, you know, in their recent win, they were very, you know, they were very successful. And I think, you know, by New Orleans, you know, and Atlanta were to beat Philadelphia, I do think that the NFC Championship game would be as hard, if not harder, for the Vikings than the current game that they're to play on Sunday. What's nice, and if you're looking at this historically as a Vikings fan, if the Vikings were to beat New Orleans and then go on and beat Atlanta, what you would have is two and the Vikings' first Super Bowl since the 70s by virtue of eliminating two teams that had previously broken their hearts in the NFC Championship game. So that's kind of neat to think about as we look to the future.
Yep, I think I've seen Redemption Tour t-shirts, Revenge Tour, and a couple other things there that that folks have really gotten into. I just want the win. I almost don't even care about all that. I just want to win because, this is the team. Like, this feels like of all the teams we've watched in recent memory, this seems like the most well-balanced team. Even though we don't have the well-known quarterback, we have the great defense. We have an offense that, even though they've tailed off towards the end of the season, for the full season, still look pretty good. And so, Eric, I guess from your perspective, from each side of the ball on offense, who might be that X factor, that player that people maybe aren't thinking about right now that could be someone who is a difference maker in this game? I know we've talked about Drew Brees, we've talked about Case Keenum, but like, who else is out there that could be really that difference maker as we get out there on Sunday?
Well, for the Vikings, I think Luke brought up the linebacker core, and I think David Morgan has sort of shown himself as a player that can make, you know, plays not only as a, you know, a plus run blocker, but also in the passing game. I, you know, could very well see a play, you know, or two where he is sort of left alone with all the attention given to the wide receivers. So for the Vikings, I would consider him, you know, he's pretty unheralded. The Saints have a decent group of players that are sort of unheralded. Brandon Coleman, I think he's hurt, but if he plays, he's somewhat dangerous. Tommy Lee Lewis as well is a player. Willie Snead had a really good year last year, and he's kind of not done much this year, but he's certainly capable. And I think it's going to be one of those players for the Saints that comes out of the slot. Michael Thomas is in the top five in the NFL in yards per route run from the slot this year. I think Terrence Newman, whether it was like for rest or injury, Mackenzie Alexander, you know, they're good players, but among the Vikings players I would target, the slot would be one of them. So think about somebody like Josh Hill, the tight end for the Saints. Somebody like that, you know, in both cases, sort of players over the middle of the field in a game where both teams have two pretty good wide receivers that can sort of break the game open. It might be kind of those, you know, tight end-ish players that end up doing so.
Awesome. And Luke, from what you've been seeing, obviously you mentioned Harrison Smith, but who else, you know, can you think of? I guess who might be the unheralded players that you think of defensively on each side there that might be able to be the ones who change the game for either team?
I think on the Saints, I think there's X factor in the way of, like, I think Marcus Williams could have a huge impact. But in terms of, like, the strongest points of variance defensively, I'm going to go with Marcus Williams because he's been pretty good and can have an impact in the game, but he's still young. And will definitely have a big impact on, like, stopping Diggs and Thielen because, like, the Saints can game plan for this by putting Marshawn Lattimore on one of them and then bracketing coverage on the other side. And, you know, that would theoretically do a pretty good job of slowing down both Diggs and Thielen, which is why I don't think this is the kind of game where, like, they go off for 250 combined yards or whatever. And Marcus Williams would be a huge part of that. And he'll also be a huge part of, like, slowing down the run game for a team that hasn't been that good at it in the last couple of weeks. On the Vikings end, defensively, I probably would have said, like, Newman or Alexander, depending on, I don't know how much Newman's going to play, considering that he's been, like, the only one on the team not practicing. But otherwise, I'll go with Tom Johnson, you know, without Andres Pete. I know the backup, I'm forgetting his name. I think I would mispronounce it anyways, but the backup guard for the Saints is not bad, but Tom Johnson would probably have to take advantage of that to create pressure because the Saints' offensive line, in terms of PFF grade, is, like, way stronger against the pass than it is against the run. Like, their run blocking grades are way, 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 way lower than their pass blocking grades, and this goes for the backup guard as well. So Tom Johnson will hopefully have an opportunity to generate some pressure in a world where I think pressure is going to be at a premium in this game. And not to mention, you know, he'll hopefully be able to have an impact in the run, but I think we can see a big Ramel Joseph game in the run too.
Tom Johnson revenge game?
Tom Johnson revenge game. An understated narrative.
Well, we need you to put pen to page and get something out on this before the game kicks off.
The Saints have the Saints have the league's highest pass blocking efficiency among all offensive lines by almost 2%. And Drew Brees is the second highest rated quarterback in the league from a clean pocket, which is both a stable statistic and and a telling one when, again, like, Drew Brees faces the least amount of pressure and is the second best quarterback in the league on those types of plays. So it's going to be really important for the Vikings to get players like Tom Johnson to the quarterback, especially up the middle, to kind of, for a shorter player like Brees, that will be huge. So I do agree with that.
And Eric, you spoke about those QB stats. Like, you've done a lot of work on quarterbacks here of late. I guess, is there anything that you've been working on that you might be able to tell us about? Because you really do seem to know your thing when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yeah. So we've for the last few months have been working on the PFF quarterback annual, which is kind of a statistical breakdown of every single quarterback, looking at kind of his distribution of routes thrown, how he does on them, time in the pocket, whether he's pressured, not pressured, all that kind of stuff. We have that for somewhere around 40 quarterbacks using PFF data. We also have a few write-ups that I'm sort of responsible for on sort of looking at our signature stats. So if you're a PFF subscriber and you look at things like accuracy percentage, or if you look at, you know, clean pocket versus not clean pocket and how stable those things are, there's a little write-up that I gave to you guys in that annual. There's also a discussion of future projects, like looking at what are called NFL throws versus non-NFL throws. We're really looking forward to evaluating draft prospects based on that. It's just great. We, you know, PFF is one of those things where a lot of people do a lot of amazing things. And what I like about something like the quarterback annual is you take somebody like Steve Palazzolo, who really understands football. You get him writing about some quarterbacks. You get somebody like me who knows less about football, but knows a ton about stats. And then somebody like my pal George Shahuri, who makes all the graphics and really is a wizard there. So it's a really nice, it's about 300 pages. It's free if you have a PFF Edge subscription, I believe. And so, you know, that thing almost itself is worth the price of admission there. So that's been a really cool project. We're thinking about doing an additional product for, like, teams where we kind of go even deeper, but for now that's kind of, like, you know, our masterpiece to this point.
And I will attest to the fact that it is awesome. And I guess to put you on the spot, I guess what stood out for you about Case Keenum when you were digging into, because you guys go really, really deep on all of the quarterbacks. It's a ton of great information there. But I guess what were the things that really stood out for you from a Case Keenum perspective?
Yeah, let me look at this. So if you go to one of our stats that we partially released in the book, it's called NFL Throws. And basically the idea is that we used a machine learning algorithm to go through all different throw types and determine using our grades or expected points whether they're an NFL throw. So you can think of an NFL throw being a throw that not every quarterback in the NFL is capable of making, and it's valuable. Okay, so like there are throws that not every quarterback's making in the NFL that aren't valuable. So I can think of things like a perfect wide receiver screen pass only a few people can make, but who cares because they don't generate a ton of points. There are throws that are valuable, but everybody makes them. I would say, I'm trying to think of an example here, but like a 5-yard hitch on third and four, most quarterbacks can make that throw. But there are these combinations of throws that, you know, and so we're looking kind of ahead to the draft on that. But for NFL players, let me quickly control F here with Keenum. We took what offensive value is generated on non-NFL throws. So things like bubble screens, passes to the backs, short passes on third and long, you know, that kind of thing. And Case Keenum was fourth in the NFL in generating expected points added on non-NFL throws. So I sort of think of that as like his supporting cast, how good his supporting cast was. Now, what's interesting is Drew Brees was second this season. And so we think about, you know, Drew Brees has kind of taken a step back to some degree, but they've been successful offensively. And what you could take from that is that their offense, players like Michael Thomas after the catch, players like Alvin Kamara after the catch, are making those types substantial value added for their quarterback. Deshaun Watson, just for point of reference, his team generated the most expected points on non-NFL throws, which is sort of why you can sort of take a step back and look and say why his PFF grade is maybe lower than the perception based upon his statistics, is that a lot of the plays he made were sort of bubble screens to DeAndre Hopkins, kind of like quick slants to Will Fuller, those kinds of things that are valuable, but most NFL quarterbacks can make those throws. And so we don't count them as NFL throws. When you look at, you know, PFF grade generated on NFL throws, so the throws that we want to evaluate quarterbacks mostly on, Case Keenum is 13th in the league. And so, you know, behind first in the league is Tom Brady, second is Matt Ryan, third is Jimmy Garoppolo, fourth is Carson Wentz. They're like the top players kind of up here there. When we look at Case Keenum from that lens, he's a little bit less impressive than maybe his statistics or our perception.
That's really, really, really awesome. And I guess it lends a question. I'm going to let Luke go first on this one. But when I look at, you know, the team the Vikings have put around Case Keenum and the amount of success they've had, it goes a little bit against the NFL convention in that, you know, you need to have the elite quarterback, and the elite quarterback kind of carries everyone or pulls everyone up with them. And that's the only way that you win. So when you're going to the draft, you need to make sure that you do everything you can. And you need to reach or trade up and do a lot of things that from a draft value perspective, maybe aren't the smartest to get a quarterback. Or, you know, this free agency period, people are saying that, you know, Kirk Cousins might push $30 million a year in terms of salary because you have to find a quarterback. Is the way the Vikings have done it or have built this team, is that the right way, the better way from y'all's perspective? Or is finding that elite quarterback still the end-all, be-all? Because you can see, even with Brees, who's still elite, very, very good, but his supporting cast is still buoying him where he can still kind of produce at that level that he's produced at, you know, when he was still that elite guy. So I guess, Lucas, what are your thoughts as teams look forward onto how they're going to build their teams? Which way makes more sense from your perspective?
I mean, this is kind of a year of like case studies for this exact question, right? With like the Eagles and the Packers, you know, they lost their quarterback and they've just like totally fallen apart as teams in terms of pretty much any analytic you can think of for like weighted DVOA. By the, you know, once they lost their quarterback, like the drop off in play was just like palpable. And now we're going to head into an offseason where, like, oh, no, we don't know who our quarterback's going to be. But, like, it kind of doesn't matter because who isn't going to be successful in this scheme where we can, you know, have five-yard out routes go for 60-yard touchdowns, like the Adam Thielen play against the Rams. I definitely think, you know, it's hard to look at the current state of the NFL and not say, like, wow, I'd much rather have, like, this amazing supporting cast and have a perfect environment where any quarterback can be successful. I think a good quarterback can mask issues on your team better than any other single player can, which is why it's still obviously the most important thing on the team, especially like wins above replacement. Like no other position even touches quarterback in terms of like how many wins above replacement like a good quarterback can offer you. So obviously it's still the most important position. But, you know, it's harder to get to the point where you have such a good supporting cast where, you know, your quarterback can kind of be, like, mediocre and you can still be extremely successful. But, like, once you get there, suddenly your life is a lot easier. It's just that the threshold for how good your supporting cast has to be to, you know, generate a 13-3 team, like, it has to be really good. We have to have the best third down defense ever. We have to have the best wide receiver duo in the league. We have to have a good offensive line on top of that. And that is a huge sink of resources, and that's really, really hard to build. But once you can do it successfully, that's a much better place to be than, like, you know, we have a great chance unless Aaron Rodgers go down, you know, then we're effed. Like, I forget, I think it was Tony Dungy who was, you know, talking about how we never gave Jim Sergio any reps because we don't practice effed.
Yeah, that's like Tom Moore is a great quote. I think Luke hits on something, and then there's a follow-up to it though too. It's very hard to get a supporting cast of the caliber that Minnesota has. It's even harder to maintain it. And I think that's the reason why having an elite quarterback is the most important thing in pro sports, because not only do elite quarterbacks buoy teams that are otherwise poor, they last longer than elite defenses and even elite supporting cast. Look at, if you look at like the Tom Brady led Patriots have gone from the 3-4 to the 4-3 back to the 3-4. They've gone from good defenses, bad defenses, good defenses, bad defenses. They've gone from having no, like Jabbar Gaffney at wide receiver, Rashay Caldwell at wide receiver, to Corey Dillon at running back, to Gronk and Hernandez as their main offense, to Randy Moss on the outside being their main offense, to this season where it's some Gronk and some Brandon Cooks second in the league in deep receiving yards. Everything has changed around Tom Brady during his time with the Patriots, except for Tom Brady. And they've been completely steady with all these other things. If you look at, Ben Roethlisberger has had, you know, anybody, Rashard Mendenhall at running back. He's had Willie Parker at running back. He has Le'Veon Bell at running back now. And, you know, he's the best that he's had. But then he had Antonio Brown as a sixth round pick. Before then it was Hines Ward, that kind of thing. Like, there's just been a ton in the way of change for a lot of these elite quarterbacks. And, you know, they're the one constant. And I think that is worth its weight in gold. And I think that's why when Jason talks about, you know, this is the year, this feels like it, I agree 100% with him, because you have to cash in when you have an elite support. When you're the 2015 Denver Broncos, you have to cash in, because as we've seen, an injury here or there, a guy leaves here or there, and you're just simply not going to have the maintenance of that kind of elite play moving on into the future.
Awesome. Thank you for indulging me on that tangent that was not discussed before we went live. I think we pretty much covered most of everything we wanted to get to here. So the last thing I guess I have for both of you here, and Eric, I'll go with you first here. I guess thoughts on the outcome of this Vikings-Saints matchup that we all obviously care about so much.
Yeah, this week, and I think it already dropped on, if you go to the PFF podcasts, either on the website or on iTunes, I think we're currently under drafts with Jordan and Josh, but that should change. George Shahuri and I have a new podcast called the PFF Forecast, and the joke is, of course, that it was the PFF 3.5 cast, but there were, much like the Vikings, a ton of money on the favorite. So we made it the PFF 4 cast. So we talk about various things, but one of the things we do is talk about picking games. And the game we felt most strongly about this week was actually Minnesota. New Orleans, you know, 5 points underdogs in Minnesota. We like actually New Orleans to cover that game. We do like Minnesota to win, but we feel that, you know, one of the proverbs that we have is that when you have the better quarterback getting points, especially more than a field goal, it's probably, you know, the best move to take the dog there. So I'm thinking, you know, something on the order of, you know, 24-21 Minnesota, 26-23, maybe something like that. I do think it's a close game. I do think it gets, you know, it touches. I mean, it could be a very much an under game if the Vikings are successful running the ball, but I do see it in the 20s. And I do see the Vikings coming out ahead, but I do think it's close. And hopefully we'll see y'all next week with them playing the Falcons or the Eagles.
Love it. Luke, what about you, man?
I am in a similar spot. I think I would say something like 2017. I don't think the Saints are going to get over 20 just by virtue of the fact that nobody has in U.S. Bank Stadium this year, which is kind of insane just to think about. I also think the biggest surprise of the game, and I was really bullish on this game, Purple Journals. I'm very confident because I really like what I see in the deep numbers. But I think that the running game for the Saints is going to get stifled, both because, you know, the offensive line, as celebrated as it is a sneaky bad run-blocking offensive line, and we have an incredible run defense, and they're the kind of players who can tackle Ingram and Kamara. Like, Carolina was able to shut them down pretty well, and we have better run defense, in my opinion. So I feel really good about shutting down the run game, and then just kind of, it sounds really silly, like making Drew Brees beat this secondary. And I like our chances in a boxing match, a heavyweight boxing match between probably the hottest or second hottest quarterback in football and the best or second best secondary in football. So I went with like 2017 or something like that, or like 21-18 if you want to make it weird. And on the Purple Journal, I said that McKinnon and Murray would outgain Ingram and Kamara from scrimmage as my bold prediction for the week.
That's hot.
I'm excited about that.
I like
that. That's a hot take.
I like that.
And
I
also really love that if you don't think that the Saints offense or the Vikings defense is the best in football, the other options for that are also playing each other, because it's also the Steelers offense and the Jags defense. And all that.
That's going to be fun too. Well, all right. We've covered everything. I guess I'll roll with the same score prediction I gave on Climbing the Pocket. So I'm going 28-24 Vikings, and I feel like Stephon Diggs is going to go off in this game. It's been missed by many because of how hot Thielen came out of the gate and the stats that he put up there kind of in the middle part of the season. But, you know, Diggs quietly crept ahead of Thielen in the Pro Football Focus wide receiver grades. You know, Football Outsiders likes Diggs a little bit more than Thielen as well. And he's been playing really, really well, and just with that vulnerability that, you know, the Saints have shown to the deep ball, I think Diggs is the player that could really take advantage of that. So I'm seeing or hoping for a big game from him that really blows this thing open. So, yeah. Well, all right, guys, I think we covered everything. I'd say thanks for staying up late with me this time, but, you know, it's not really late where you guys are. It's just late for me here. So with that said.
Thank you.
With that said, I'll say thank you for listening to another episode of the Pocket Protective Podcast. And, we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good one.